One of the things that makes it difficult for a church like ours to evaluate its progress is that the list of things that we're not doing and the needs that we're not meeting is always much bigger than the list of things that we are doing. Even big, well-resourced churches can always identify more pressing needs around them than they are ever going to be able to respond to in any meaningful way. When we read words like those that we heard from the Apostle Paul earlier, when he said, "I have become all things to all people that I may by all means save some," it's pretty easy to start feeling quite inadequate about it all. We're not doing much about feeding the hungry or sheltering the homeless. We're not meeting the needs of refugees or offering much support to the hundreds of people just across the road with drug and alcohol problems. Even our worship doesn't cater particularly well for people with hearing impairments or for those who desire to exercise the gift of tongues in the service, or those who like to be in and out in under an hour. If being all things to all people means providing something for everybody, whatever their need, then whichever way you look at it, we're not doing that well. But maybe it doesn't mean that at all. And maybe the story of Jesus that we heard in the gospel reading can offer us some help here. Because Jesus certainly didn't seem intent on providing everyone with just what they were looking for. In fact, when everyone started expecting him to do that, he walked away and left town. And I reckon that if you want to understand why Jesus was eventually betrayed by one of his closest friends and followers, you can probably trace the issue right back to here in the opening chapter of Mark's Gospel, when Jesus begins disappointing some of the big ambitions that others had for him. The story starts promisingly enough. Jesus heals Simon Peter's sick mother-in-law, and she gets up and serves them dinner. And it's told in such a matter-of-fact, unsensational way that it's over in a couple of sentences. But the news obviously got around the town in a rather more sensational form, because in the very next verse, the whole town is beginning to gather on the doorstep, bringing everyone who was sick or tormented looking for healing. If Jesus is looking for an audience for his preaching, he's hit the jackpot. Instant success. They're flocking to his door and they're going to hang on every word that he says. So he does indeed respond to their needs, and we're told that he heals many people of various diseases and frees others from demonic forces. But what happens the next morning? Well, the morning crowd on the doorstep is even bigger than the one the night before, but Jesus is nowhere to be found. All things to all people, he's being nothing to nobody. The disciples hunt him down, and finding him praying in a quiet place outside the town, they say, "Jesus, you came to proclaim a message, and now you've got your biggest ever audience waiting to see you. What are you doing out here?" Jesus doesn't offer any explanation. He just says, "I think it's time we moved on to the next town so I can preach there too. That's what I've come to do. Let's go." You can hear Judas Iscariot tearing his hair out already. I mean, he's the treasurer and they haven't even taken up the offering yet. It would be a little bit like if a journalist visited our church and wrote a glowing article about us in the newspaper, and the next week 100 new people turned up, but when it came time for the service, I was absent without leave. And when you finally found me, I said, I've been praying all night and I think we should close the church immediately and move to Craigieburn and start all over again. You'd be quite sure I had lost the plot. After all the work that we've put in developing the church and seeking to become a relevant Christian presence in the local community, you don't just walk away the moment people begin to catch on and respond. So why did Jesus do exactly that? Presumably the answer is to be found in that early morning prayer time. Jesus' time of prayer in a deserted place. But Mark doesn't give us any details, just what was happening before and what happened after. So we'll never know exactly what went on between Jesus and God in that time, but a bit of educated guesswork and a good read of the way Mark puts his story together in this gospel, and it seems fairly clear what the issues were. Just a couple of paragraphs earlier, Mark has told us that Jesus was tempted in the wilderness by the Satan. Now, unlike Matthew and Luke, Mark doesn't give us any detail of the actual temptations. But what you see instead is the same temptations presenting themselves repeatedly through the stories of Jesus' life. Come on, Jesus, do the spectacular thing. Turn stones into bread and feed the hungry. Nothing wrong with that. Heal people of all their diseases. Nothing wrong with that. Trade on your fame and popularity. Build an instant following by giving them exactly what they want. Be all things to all people. Think of all the good you'll be able to achieve when you're famous and sought after. Nothing will be too much for you with influence like that. And Jesus turns his back and walks away. His is not the pathway of success and fame and power. He knows that making the healings the number one thing in his ministry is a shortcut to popularity, to building a big following, to church growth, healthy bank accounts. But he also knows that if he does that, he will actually lose any chance of his message being taken seriously. He will just become the dispensary of instant gratification for the needy multitudes, and they'll flock to him to get their piece of whatever they're looking for and then leave to tell others where the free stuff is. And he can preach till he's blue in the face and they'll just nod gratefully and leave when they've got the goodies that they came for. If he wants success and popularity, it'd be a great strategy. But if he wants to call people to a life that is absurd by the standards of this world, he'd be wasting his breath. And maybe when we're feeling like we're not attracting new people the way we'd like to, and we see other churches with all sorts of whiz-bang programs and ministries drawing the crowds, it's time to head to a deserted place and to pray. Anyone with some basic social research skills can produce a needs profile for the local community and identify target groups and devise a product to offer. And that's a fine thing to do if you're doing it in response to some prayerful discernment of the pathways into which God is calling us. But sometimes it's just clever product placement, and it's got nothing to do with the integrity of the gospel. Sure, a family ministries model might attract more people with young children. Contemporary praise and worship music with a full band is a fairly marketable commodity among the baby boomers. Frontline justice ministries among the disadvantaged can draw a good crowd from the Christian left. But the reality is that we're not actually going to hear God's call simply by doing an inventory of the needs that we're not meeting. any more than Jesus was discerning God's call simply by seeking to find out what the crowd at the door wanted. If we would hear God above the competing cries of the ever-present smorgasbord of needs, we need to seek out a deserted place where we can meet God in silence and stillness, the silence that unmasks us, and the stillness that always finds us unprepared. And there we are going to have to let God unclothe us of our pride, unweave our thoughts, uncomplicate our hearts. For only then will we hear the difference between all the cries of "do this for me, do this for me," and God's whispers in the silence of "do this, do this." And it's only there in the places of silence and nakedness before God that we are ever going to find the courage and strength to turn our backs and walk away from the easy roads of popularity. It'll hurt to turn away, to take the path of faithfulness and integrity. But it is only when we take that path that we will discover the truth of the promise that we hear in Isaiah, that those who wait trustingly for the Lord will find their strength renewed. They will rise up on wings like eagles. They will run and not get weary. They will walk and not grow weak. Jesus waited trustingly on God in a deserted place in the early hours of the morning. And as he waited, God showed him another way. Not the way of popularity and success, but the way of suffering that runs all the way to the cross. But Isaiah's promise held true. He rose up with the breath of God's Spirit bearing him up like the wind beneath an eagle's wings. We declare our faith around this table week after week, and we share with him in his broken body to remind ourselves that the voice of silence in the deserted places is calling us to the same path that he took. And that if we too take the path of integrity, we too will find ourselves raised up with the Spirit beneath our wings.